Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. Tonight's author on tour is Sheila Lukens, who discusses her new cookbook, 10, All the Foods We Love and 10 Recipes for Each, published by Workman. In the weeks to come, we have Michael J. Henry and many more. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute. It's time to begin.
Good evening, folks, and welcome to the Tattered Cover. I'm really pleased. This is the first time I've met Sheila Lukens, although I've heard so much about her over the years. And I'm so excited about this new cookbook. I told her I can't wait to do the short ribs and the sorbets and the pies and the some of the other sauces and stuff. So you all may know a lot about her, but she's a member of Les Dames Escoffier, among many other things, but I like saying that. She's lived in Paris, Bordeaux, Philadelphia, and New York. Was inducted into James Beard's Who's Who of Food and Beverage in America, and the Silver Palette cookbook was named to James Beard's Foundation Cookbook Hall of Fame. So this book, 10, All the Foods You Love, is a 10 of a cookbook, I think. So.
Thank you. I'll tell you a little bit about... Hi, I'll tell you a little bit about my cookbook. Born in Philadelphia, actually, grew up in Connecticut and moved to New York and have never left. That's why I don't have a New York accent. Anyway, so let me tell you about this book, 10. I was out to dinner with my publisher, who has been my publisher since the Silver Palette Cookbook, and my editor, Suzanne Rafer. And we were talking about food, which is not much different than what we always talk about. And we were talking about all the cravings we have and when we always feel like, you know, when we're kind of down and a little low-key, how much we crave a steak and need that blood in us. So, like, we might need tonight for us to get up at 3 in the morning and go to the airport, me and Lori. But or how much we crave a lobster or how what a passion we have for chocolate and chocolate desserts, or what passions we all have for ice cream and how we go to the freezer in the middle of the night with a spoon and barely even bother with a dish and stick a spoon right into the pint container, or how much we need, as when every holiday comes up, a large important roast or something like that, and how much we all love our seasonal foods, say, at the end of March when it's kind of cold and dreary, and we just can't wait until April when those asparagus pop up and how fantastic that is. Or in the summer when the tomatoes are ripe and we finally get over those winter tomatoes and get to eat one of those extraordinary summer tomatoes and we remember what a summer tomato tastes like. Or when the Silver Queen corn comes in and it is sweet and young and tiny little white kernels. Or the berries come in, the local strawberries in Long Island, or all your berries in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, you know, there are just so many fabulous foods we all want all the time. And Peter Workman says, there's a book here. And that is how this book came to be. And so I said, what a great idea. And he said, and we'll do 10 recipes for each one of those foods we love and adore. And so we got to talking, and we talked our way through the dinner. And, of course, Suzanne, being the editor and the one who is always so practical and so responsible, said, of course, you know, I'll need an outline. And so I go back home and I start thinking about it. She said, you know, Sheila, sit down and make a list of all the foods that you think should be in a book like this. So I sat down at my table, at my dining room table, and I thought of about 32 foods. Now, that's 32 more or less, because it might have been more when I started. And I sat there for 4 months, and I put together a list, call it a list, of all the foods I thought were absolutely marvelous, that we all love and adore, that we all love to eat, that we all do eat, and or food ideas. Even chickens, it is roasted chickens in my book. Every section, every chapter, say, every food is very specific. So it was not just grains, it's grain salads. It's not just a roast. It's large, important roasts, and everyone is very significant. And then we have seafood salads, which are kind of the crawlers, those kind of seafood salads. And then we have big fish. I really was thinking about what should I name my fish chapter. And Suzanne said big fish, and those are the swimmers. And those are the really big, beautiful fish. And then we have, at the beginning, we have cocktails, of course. And during the last couple years, cocktails out and about in different bars all over the country have really been lavish, wonderful, unusual cocktails. Not the same old screwdriver or this or that. So I really have some fabulous cocktails in the book. Now, what one cocktail to keep us all grounded was a Manhattan. I thought there had to be something there for the boys. I did. But anyway, it's very nice, a very good Manhattan. So that's there. I needed something brown also. So that is there, and it's very good. But that's become very popular this year. It seems, you know, there's the year of the Cosmo, which has seemed to have lived through, excuse me, lived through several decades after, well, not decades, but year after year. Anyway, the Cosmo's doing just fine. But what I found this year I made, which is new and people are loving, is this pomegranate coup de champagne, which is different than a kir. I found kirs a little anemic after a while. Some champagne and some raspberry syrup, a little Chambord, and then kir, champagne, or white wine. I did Prosecco, first of all. I think in today's day and age, I call it a pomegranate coup de champagne, but we've all been using and drinking Prosecco, which is a sparkling Italian white wine, which is a lot less expensive than a bottle of champagne and does serve the same purpose for this drink. So we put a little pomegranate syrup in the bottom of a glass and fill it with Prosecco, and it's really fabulous. So I've been doing that, or champagne if you want. So that's one of the cocktails, and it's terrific. Very fun, very modern, and very youthful. Anyway, so that's one of them, but there are 10 of them. There are 10 recipes to each chapter, and they're 32 chapters. And they're grains. They're wonderful grains. There's farro, an Italian grain, extraordinarily delicious. And then there's tabbouleh, and there's, of course, rice. And there's quinoa from South America, and there's couscous. And there are the things you would expect. Then there's a grits souffle. So there are all kinds of really excellent recipes. And I think you will enjoy if you see the book, look through the book. Anyway, So I finally handed this in. Suzanne sent my outline back to me. I sent it back to her. And we finally struck a happy medium. And we agreed that the book was done. My outline was finally in. And the way I work is that I... oh, that's her phone. I work very closely to my outlines. Once an outline is signed off on, once I spent, as I said, 4 months working on one, that was it. I mean, I filled in the recipes I was going to try to do for each chapter, and then I developed those recipes day by day, but I need to know what I'm going to cook every day, or there's no way I would know how to shop or how to get everything done. So that's what I did. Anyway, we got started, and this book is the result. And I'm happy to say I think it's great. I think you would like it. Anyway, I thought you might like. Do you, any one of you know about how I got started? And would you like to know?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then I'll tell you. First of all, I got married. That's how I got started cooking, which I don't know if people still do, but I felt when girls got married, they had to know how to cook. And I know that's, my daughter lives out here in Boulder, and I'll tell you, she cooks, I guess her husband told us, tonight I had dinner with her husband, he came down from Boulder. What did he say, how many nights a week does Annabelle cook? Three nights a week, and she works full-time. I guess that's fair. But I cooked every night when I got married. And I got a subscription to Gourmet Magazine when I got married, and I taught myself how to cook. I never went to culinary school, and maybe a little bit in London, when I lived in London, and that was kind of the dilettante's course, not a degree program. But I already knew how to cook. And little by little by little, I taught myself how to make a million different things. And I felt that I had a real handful for it. And so not only did I cook dinners, I entertained a lot, and I enjoyed that. We moved to London, and then we came back. And then I had these two adorable babies, Annabelle and Molly, two little girls. And while I had the girls, I didn't really want to go out and get a full-time job. I was doing some graphic design in the house, and I had some clients, but it really wasn't paying very well. So I thought, oh, man, I've got to really do something to make some money. One day, while I was home with the girls, I got a telephone call from this investment banker named George, who actually turned out to be my landlord at the Silver Pallet. But he lived across the courtyard from my building, in my building. And he said, Sheila, you got to help me. I'm in big trouble. What's the matter, George? Well, I'm having all these people for dinner tonight. And usually I call the superintendent and his wife bakes me a lasagna. She bakes me lasagna and makes me a salad. And they're on vacation, so what am I going to do? How am I going to feed these people? So I said, look, George, this is nothing you should worry about. First of all, I'm home with the girls today. I'll cook dinner for you. And then I'll send it over about 6 o'clock with the elevator man. All you need to do is return my dishes tomorrow. So what are you going to pay me, George? Well, George said about we settled on $100 plus the cost of the food. So as far as I was concerned, that was a fortune. I was so excited to get that $100 in my pocket. So anyway, I said, look, George, I'm going to make you a Greek dinner. So I made a great big moussaka, which is actually very popular again these days. I made a great big moussaka, big salad, Greek salad, and little dips. I made some baba ganoush, some tara masala, sent over some pita bread, probably ran down to the Greek store on 9th Avenue in Manhattan and picked up some grape leaves, stuffed grape leaves, and some baklava for dessert. Sent it all over. He calls me the next day. Oh, my God, that was so fantastic. Everybody loved it. As a matter of fact, Sheila, big night, Gail Green, the food writer for New York Magazine, was there. And she loved it. And she has an idea. She thinks you should start a catering business for single men. And so someone else was there, too, another writer from New York Magazine. They both think so, but they want to write about it for the magazine, but they're going to call Ellen Stern, who was then doing Best Bets for New York Magazine. She wants you to come up and see her with lots of food, and she wants to write the article. So I thought, oh, my God, this is so great. Look what happened, just because I said yes to George. Anyway, Ellen Stern calls me. I go up to New York Magazine with a picnic basket of salmon mousse, pâté maison, which was the chicken liver pâté with currants, and chicken marbella. She goes crazy. She loves it. And she says, I'm going to do a full-page story on you for New York Magazine. I'm coming up to your kitchen to photograph you. So I said, fantastic. So anyway, she comes up and photographs me. I'm holding a big platter of chicken marbella, which I did make then, even before the silver palette. So she does it. And she always had great headlines, that Ellen Stern. She did this headline, Eat, Drink, and Be Merry. And the other woman catering company was born. And it was so funny. In 2 weeks, I got, like, calls from 200 single guys. So that was it. It was a catering was written up that I catered for single men. And my subheading was so discreet, so delicious, and I deliver. And that was that. Right. Very good. But what was so interesting was that these guys didn't call me for their personal use. Primarily, it was for they had small businesses. They all had their own small businesses. So mostly I heard from their secretaries. And the secretaries would book events. They would all entertain clients. So they would call. Secretaries would order what they needed for certain events. And I would send over the food in my serving dishes. The secretaries would send them back clean with a check. And I was in business. I mean, it was amazing. I cooked and cooked and cooked. This was out of my apartment. And I still had my two little daughters there. Seeing them, I think one was going to nursery school then. Then, one day, out of the blue, I get this phone call. It was probably a year and a half or so later. I get this phone call from this woman. Hello, my name is Julie Rosso, and I'm Michael blah, blah, blah's girlfriend. And I've been eating your food for a year and a half, and I love it. He was one of my clients, and he had a small ad agency. In the meantime, she was living with him, and she got the leftovers. So anyway, she knew my food. She said, I would like to hire you to do a press breakfast at Ole Cassini's house. Burlington is introducing a new line of his sheets. And so she said, would you do this breakfast? I said, great. I would love to do that breakfast. So I did. I made this elaborate press breakfast. I rented cappuccino machines, espresso machines. I had waiters making egg creams, which are really chocolate milk. I've got this Fox's You Bet chocolate syrup in Brooklyn. I bought these seltzer bottles, these turquoise seltzer bottles, and the waiters were spritzing them. And, you know, the whole thing was really fantastic. I served blackberry mousse, lemon mousse. We had croissants. We had figs wrapped with prosciutto. I think the press wrote about the food and not the sheets. But the food was great. But Julie loved the food and asked me to finish off the cocktail hour of the rest of her market week up at Burlington. And then she got in touch with me. She said, look, it was all so successful. I would like to talk to you about an idea I have. And the idea was opening a store, because a lot of women at that time had gone back to work and were no longer barefoot, pregnant, and in the kitchen. And they needed to be able to pick up dinner on their way home from work. She had an idea to open a shop called The Best of Everything, where we would buy foods in, the best breads, the best cheeses, the best charcuterie, shelf items, etc. And they could stop on the way. We'd be open until 9 o'clock. They could stop on the way home from work and pick up a full dinner or a dinner party. And she said, do you want to do it? I said, well, I'm not really sure. I need to think about this, because I knew this was going to be a full-time commitment. And she said, well, if not you, I'll do it with someone else. And then I said, well, of course I'll do it, because she made me crazy already. That was the beginning of her making me crazy. But anyway, that was how we started the Silver Palette. And then we started looking for space and to open a shop. Well, first we looked on the Upper East Side of New York, which is where we thought, which is really the fancy area. That's where, like, Park Avenue is, Fifth Avenue, Madison Avenue. But it was just too expensive. The rent, the rentals, the space was just too expensive. So we started to look on the Upper West Side of New York. And we found on Columbus Avenue, that's just a block off Central Park West, around 72nd, 73rd Street, we found a little, I mean little, 11 by 14 radio repair shop that was really in horrible shape, but it was only $435 a month. And Columbus Avenue was pretty grubby at that time. But little by little by little, some new shops were starting to open, or some restaurants were starting to open on the street. And so we thought, well, we'll get a good architect and we'll make the store beautiful since it's so inexpensive, but let's give it a try. Was anybody here ever at the Silver Palette? You were. You were. It was beautiful, wasn't it? This architect made this space like such a little gem, huh? It was like a little jewel box. Anyway, so we did that, and we got an architect, and we fixed it up. But the way it got its name was very interesting. This was in 1977, and Florence Fabricant, who works for the New York Times and writes for the Wednesday section of the paper, called me and said, Sheila, I'm doing an article on the Renaissance of Columbus Avenue, and I would really like to include you people in this story. What are you going to call the shop? I said, well, Florence, we haven't decided yet. We haven't opened up yet. We're in the process of fixing it up. She said, well, I want to include you, so hurry up and decide. So I said, Julie, we need to name the shop. And you know when two people want to name something, or three people want to name, one person has an idea, the other say, you know how it is, not easy to do. So we went out to dinner, Julie, her boyfriend Michael, me, my husband Richard. We went out to a place downtown in Soho, Raoul's, for dinner. Mostly because it had paper tablecloths and we could write on it. Also, the food was good on Prince Street. And so we went there for dinner to try to name this place. Now, at that time in London, like the Purple Onion was a very edgy name, so that was in contention. That was one thought. Another was, remember, Julie's boyfriend was an advertising guy. He thought something very cool would be like Seaboard Deluxe. He really wanted that name. That meant to go in coffee shop lingo. It's like BLT Seaboard, meaning to travel or whatever. So we thought, well, that sounds good. Actually, that turned out to be our corporate name, Seaboard Deluxe. It was always our corporate name. So then Florence calls me the next day and says, so? I said, okay, so here's what we have. We have the Purple Onion. She said, oh, please. So that was that. Then I said, also, the one we're really thinking of using, Florence, is Seaboard Deluxe. She said, what's that? It sounds like a railroad station. I said, well, that's all we've come up with. She said, why don't you just call it the Silver Palette? Said, great, that's what we use. And she every time I see her, she reminds me, I should have gotten a commission on that. And anyway, that's that. So that's how the shop was named. Now, we opened July 1977. The first night we opened, there was a concert. By this time, I was already cooking fresh food in my apartment. The idea of the best of everything never really worked because everybody wants fresh food. But I was cooking like crazy in my apartment and every day. So anyway, the first night we opened in July 77, there was a concert in Central Park. The place was stocked with tons of food. The neighborhood was so excited. The concert came. People came in to buy food for the concert because they were having picnics. Gone. It was like they rushed the shop. It wasn't one drop of food left. And then we had to do it all over again, and every single day, until we closed the shop in 1988. No, I'm telling you, they wiped us out completely. I couldn't believe it. And then, at that time, I was the only one cooking. It was just, I thought I was going to die, but I didn't. I kept pressing forward. Julie worked in the shop. I cooked. And then every day at 4 o'clock, sent the food over from my apartment. But finally, my building went crazy, and someone named Mimi Sheraton, who was a food writer, restaurant critic for the New York Times, turned me into the Board of Health. Said I was cooking in my apartment, so that was the end of that. I mean, seriously, bad thing to do. But anyway. Because plenty of people do make little things in their apartment and sell them to people. But still, nevertheless, not nice. We had to get another space around the corner from the shop because there was still no room in the shop to cook. It was too small, even though it was renovated. Around the corner, we got a space and we bought stoves and everything, old refrigerators, and put in a walk-in box and hired help. So we really started cooking out of that space, and it became, you know, very legitimate. We had to because we were so busy and started doing catering and blah, blah, blah. Then how we got into the products. One Christmas times, we had already been to Europe a lot and bought these beautiful glass jars and bottles, and we're making our own blueberry vinegar and raspberry vinegar to sell to people at gifts for the holidays, and putting fruits and brandies and stuff and selling them in fancy jars. So one day, Sunday, I think, you know, clever merchants walk up and down the streets to look for new products all the time. This very nice-looking man comes in this shop, and he says, hello, my name is Gordon Siegel, and I'm the owner of Crate and Barrel, and I'm looking for products for my catalog, food products. Now, I love what you're doing. Can you do some of those for my catalog this year? And, of course, we always said yes, then figured out how to get the job done. So we said, sure. So, and then they put, you know, those orders in, which come in by computer, you know, for 1,000 cases. And then we had to do them. I mean, you know, down in the basement of our little place around the corner. I mean, it was like a nightmare, but never mind. We did them, and that's how we got into the product business. And then another nice-looking man up the street was Bert Tansky, the president of Saks Fifth Avenue. And he also wanted stuff for his catalog and his gift shop. So the combination of them both, that's how we got into the product business. And by the time finally we got a factory to pack our products. We, you know, although they were always all natural, the layered stuff was always packed by hand. I mean, it was great. It really was. And I went to the factory every time we packed those products. I made all the formulas. I made all the, I'd like to call them recipes because there was never any preservatives. They weren't formulas. They were recipes. But I tell you, it was some business, and we sold over 2,000 products in over 2,000 stores across the country. We sold in Europe. We had two shops in Japan, in Tokyo, you know, really by the time we were through. And in 1986, about then, I became food editor of Parade, and I am still food editor of Parade. And so I've been very busy. And this is... it's like, oi. And this is my seventh book, as I said. And the Silver Palette Cookbook never belonged to the business, but we wrote that 25 years ago. And I really never wanted to because I thought Julie did. But actually, a woman who worked for both Workman and Vogue magazine said, we used to do a newsletter for the store with illustrations and little bits of information, and it really looked exactly like the first Silver Palette Cookbook. And she said, you know, let me take this newsletter and bring it to Peter Workman. I think you should have a cookbook that looks just like this. Come up and meet my boss, Peter Workman. And that's really what the first cookbook was based on, the first Silver Palette Cookbook was based on. And we had to really sell that to Peter Workman, because he never wanted to do that book. But he did do it. He did do it. And that was published in, I don't know, 79 or something like that, I think. But we just had a 25-year anniversary edition of it. So, you know, life goes on. I've done other things. I redid all the food on United Airlines coach. I've done a lot of things. I've been very busy, and I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you very
much. Thank you. That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for Michael J. Henry and many more as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on December 8th, 2008.